I'm going to hurt you. And I'm going to do it with my snake. And I'm going to wrap my python around your neck. And I'm going to choke it. Oh, stop it.
This is Tall Can Audio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome inside a brand new edition of the Tall Can Audio Podcast. First show back live in the TCA studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada in almost 2 weeks. Very excited to see my gear, my microphones. Very excited to talk to all of you and just okay with the fact that Lever Sage is sitting across the table today.
You know
what's happening, man?
To be back in the studio, and I thought you were going to really put me on a pedestal there. Like, you're back. Like, I'm so excited.
Okay?
To
you on some meds or something? Why did you think that?
See your microphones.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what?
This is a nice microphone.
It is a nice microphone, but you've seen it a million. You've seen it, like,
but
what?
It's been a while.
1,400 times or
1,300 and some odd.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
A whole 13, heck 19. Of a darn lot.
Oh, although, you're kidding yourself if you think this was the setup the first several hundred episodes ran with.
Yes, we talked about from the humble beginnings last week.
It's true.
To
here and now.
The pedestal that you're on now.
Yeah. That you hoped I was going to hoist you up to.
Hope is strong when it comes to you.
Yeah, okay.
So, lot to get to though today. And I'm excited to find out how your week was at the cottage.
Mm-hmm.
You're back,
mm-hmm.
raring to go.
Full of energy.
The hottest day of the year.
Full of piss and vinegar.
What is it? Feels
first,
like,
I was just full of vinegar.
Feels like 37.
Honest to God.
It's fantastic.
I suppose.
Yeah, but are you a winter guy? Do you like winter?
Not really.
Okay, so then you don't. This is what I tell people. You can't complain.
Give me like a nice 24 degrees all summer.
give me like one the day in May where it's...
The
it's,
day.
It's
that's right.
24.
That's correct. There is one
day
every spring and every fall where I think the weather is perfect.
Right.
Beyond that.
Because
I'm
it goes
I'm
from
unhappy.
Winter to summer very quickly now.
Yeah.
But
it, honestly, you could, I don't like, and really we didn't have it this year, but like the minus 20 ice everywhere, like this year, winter was pretty tame. But like you could keep me happy at like plus 5 to 23. Anywhere in there is fine. Like it's not bitterly cold.
So go to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay. And live there.
I may.
Yeah.
A lot of hippies out there.
Okay, go to Vancouver Island.
And they're a little grumpy
Victoria.
Right now. Victoria's nice. I've been there.
It's gorgeous, actually. The island is one of my favorite places. I hadn't been like most of my life until a few years ago.
Right.
Oh my God, what a place.
Yeah. No, it's good. So, well, we got a bunch of stuff to cover. So let's not dig around too long here. We're still in the midst of your
dick around.
Vegetable juice cleanse or whatever you're working on over there. So what are you
Pat Quinn,
on
right?
Today?
We dick around. That's what Pat Quinn used
that.
To say.
Wow,
yes,
God,
I am officially, once this airs, about 36 hours away.
Right. We just missed it.
The end.
If he was committed to the show.
For 5 weeks.
Instead of committed to his health, he'd have cut this short.
Right. He would think.
What a selfish prick.
But what I did do,
yes.
because I still am on this cleanse or whatever I
yes.
have decided that I'm calling it.
Yeah.
What I did do today, and I'm excited, and you're going to hear it, hopefully.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I brought a flask.
Yes.
And
we love that.
And in this flask is the Ashton Brewing Company's non-alcoholic beer, it's a 0.5%.
What a cheater.
And they right now are still in the process of canning it, so they have not yet. It's their first kind of foray into the non-alcoholic faux beer,
sure,
whatever, again, term you want to describe as beer, but it's not beer, but it tastes like beer, but there's no alcohol in it, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. They haven't canned it yet, but they do have it on draft at the Ashton Brewing Company.
So you walked in there with your lunch thermos.
I did. No, seriously.
Top me up.
And said, fill this. And I have yet to taste it.
Okay.
So this is my first time, even though you would think it's fairly close to where I lived that I would have wandered up. And
I absolutely believe you've wandered up many times.
Actually, they looked at
it's
me.
Not worth getting.
They
up
looked at me like,
"You okay, man?
Why?
You need to talk about some things."
Seriously, why, Lee? Why would you? You
why?
Want this?
Why
like,
would you do
it's
it?
It's your product. You make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why would you want
so
it?
So what a character.
What are you doing? So I'm going to, you heard me open it.
We did hear that, yeah.
And now I'm going to take
now
my first.
Now he's going to drink it.
Plunge
going
into
to
the.
Sample it.
I don't think there's a name for it. I don't think they have like a spiffy name. It's just their non-alcoholic.
Right.
Version of beer. What are you drinking?
So this is, I guess, going to be a show where we're both running with fairly familiar breweries. Perhaps you won't be surprised to learn, there was a beverage or two over the 10-day stretch down at the cottage.
You sitting on a dock by the water in May, your favorite time of year, where you have nothing but time on your hands with all of your teams that have shit the bed. In the last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Baseball, hockey.
Junior hockey. PWHL hockey.
Like everything.
My baseball team is dead in the water seemingly in mid-May.
Right. So you had nothing but time on your
hands.
And
lots of reasons to drink.
That's what I mean. Like I'm trying to think of, you know, the 18th reason why.
Right. But. And so that May long, it wasn't May long weather. That was Canada Day weather, right? Like that was... So, I feel like a bit of a dry out period is in order. I won't be as committed to it as you, never have been. But we'll make an effort here. And so to kick this one off, this is called Downtime. It's from the Lake Bays Brewing Company. It's their light IPA. So that's as close to alcohol-free as I'm getting. I'm going light.
Light IPA.
Yes.
What's the percentage of a light IPA?
I think this one's 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we got a little something going.
It doesn't
here.
Even matter what you say after the 2.
Yeah, yeah. No,
like, it could be 2.1, 2.9. Like, that's whatever.
That's the neighborhood we're in, though.
And by the way, I just want to mention this very quickly, that our good friend, your good friend, but starting to become my better friend, Angela, did text, I'm sure, because of you.
Right.
And texted me and... another good friend of the show, Steve Bunda, and offered a way into the Orleans Beer Festival.
Yeah, okay, nice.
A couple of weeks, which...
Yeah, she mentioned that to me as well. I'm out of town that weekend, but...
Steve said, I don't know if I can make it. I quickly said, I will take Steve's ticket and the ticket that you're offering. And I can tell you that this health cleanse, whatever you want to call it, will be fully over by Orleans Beer Fest
and rendered useless,
and I will be
been undone
making sure that I see Angela in person to thank her, to drink her beers at Lake of Bays, and to make sure that I build a new foundation for the show.
It's networking
for the show. Well, for this show to be able to rebuild this foundation of craft beer that I have
abandoned.
No, I have not abandoned. In fact, as I sip this, it actually, I'm always a little bit surprised because it tastes more like an Ashton beer than I thought it was going to.
Hmm. Well, that speaks well to them, right? That speaks well of them that they've managed to keep it beer flavored, which is not always the case with these things.
But especially you get your certain breweries, like every craft brewery, a lot of them have a very distinct taste. When you taste their beer, you kind of know it's theirs.
Yep.
And I was always worried, and maybe because I don't know enough about the non-alcoholic beer.
Right.
That I don't, and even if I, like I was telling you about Partake, I don't really have any identification with Partake, so I don't go, oh, it tastes like their normal beers.
Right.
Or I know The Athletic has one, but they don't have alcoholic beers, they just have non-alcoholic beers. It's when the craft breweries start doing the non-alcoholic stuff and I know their beers fairly well, now I want something that tastes somewhat similar, right? Because I know their distinct taste. And I'm getting that from ABC's.
Okay.
So well done,
Yeah,
Eric Dubik and the rest of the crew. And I know you put out Man, I saw a couple of people around Danny who lost his home. We talked about that last week. Burned in a fire. There's a GoFundMe page.
We'll keep sharing that in the show notes.
And so, man, just when you look at somebody and you kind of see the devastation, even though they're not like portraying it, mm-hmm. they're getting by, they're doing the best that they can, but you kind of see it.
Yeah.
Knowing and even it's tough to put yourself in the place, but to understand how devastating it is and then understand not only is everything, you know, gone that you knew, now it's, you know, insurances are involved. And
well, I had a townhouse that me and my buddy lived in that caught fire on Canada, just after Canada Day long weekend.
Oh, did you?
Now, it's different because A, we're young and don't own anything important.
Right.
And B, it's a rental place. So, but you do still lose your home. Mm-hmm. You do still have to go through all the insurance stuff that you're talking about now. And so I can only imagine when it's actually your home and you actually own it and you actually are at a point in your life where you've accumulated some things that you're proud of and that you want to keep. Mm-hmm. I can remember how bummed out I was when that happened to me and trying to then escalate that into, you know,
right.
the place I just said where it's, yeah, it's not a rental and you do care about your belongings and you, it,
yeah, and it's not only
that
yours,
around
is not only your stuff, right, but your family's stuff and what it means to them and you're going through that. But look, insurance is there for a reason, but it's never easy.
No.
And they never seem to make it easy.
No, nope, that's right.
And so it's just all of that is a lot when someone then they got to go back to work. And so again, as you said, we'll share
keep
it,
sharing the GoFundMe around if you missed it last time. Yeah. And I want to ask you, Lee.
Yes.
Because you texted me about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the first thing you said to me when you walked in the door. So I want to survey the listenership here.
Yeah.
And on Friday, I texted you and said, you know, are we back on turn for Wednesday? Is a different day better? I was just, because it's a short week, trying to get the lay of the land.
Yep. And well, you had nothing to do for 10 days other than schedule your next 10 days. So, of course.
We had some great stuff last week. Matty Connors Vita was on the show talking music. Steve Bunda was here.
Listen,
On Tuesday, coming out of the long weekend,
what
our buddy Steve McLean teed up the Memorial Cup. That was a fun show.
What you're able to do with piles of nothing is actually quite amazing because they do sound great. You did have great stuff.
Yeah.
It's just that while you're sitting around doing
Then I'm immediately headed right back to the patio and putting my feet up.
Right. I think I'm going to schedule next week here on a Friday afternoon. I'm like, I haven't thought about 2 hours.
What do you want me to wait till Tuesday with 3 days left in the short week to schedule? We're trying to run a civilization here, Lee. So I texted you on Friday at some point. You got back to me Friday night and said, Wednesday looks good, probably around 4 or 5 o'clock. So far, am I painting this fairly?
Yes.
Okay. So that was the extent of it.
Yep.
You said you're coming 4 to 5. That works for me.
I'll be there.
Yeah. So you texted me again on Wednesday and roughly 3:30.
Yep.
And said, I'm about 30 minutes out.
Yeah.
And I responded with K.
You hear the groans from the listenership right now? You hear them. I know you hear them. You can't do that.
So, okay, and this is why I'm going to put it out on. So, we want to hear from you on social media. Maybe I'll put out a poll. We'll do something like that. But I want to hear from you whether you guys think K is an acceptable response. Because I'll be honest with you, I was on the mic in here when you sent that. And so, the shorter, the better. I could have done the thumbs up reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have been more, less?
No, that's fine.
Okay. But K is not fine.
So almost anything that you're going to say as far as a thumbs up, a check mark.
To me, this is acknowledged.
A KK, a double K.
I'm not a 15-year-old girl. I'm not hitting you with the KK. That's KK. I don't know.
You can listen. No, I'm just saying there are a lot of abbreviations to keep it short.
What's wrong with the single K?
It's rude. I'm telling you, it's rude. It's short. It's like, I'm not happy with you, so I'm going to tell you in one letter.
To me, I'm saying acknowledged in one letter.
You are the 1% in this discussion. Now, you're a 1% or a lot of the time, except when you drink.
Yeah, this 2% is...
Well, you were 9% last week. That was fairly impressive. But
You're not digging it. You're not digging the K.
No, I know when I receive it.
When I hit that, there is no ill will. There is no frustration. I'm telling you, I don't know what you're looking for. Dearest Lee, in response to your most recent communication,
I'm looking for
outlining your
anything else?
Estimated time of arrival, I acknowledge and thank you for your consideration in this matter. I will anxiously await your arrival. Sincerest regards, Matt Robinson.
That would be Matthew. Would be great. That was better. If you could write that, I am totally okay with almost anything, whether it's a thumbs up, check mark, another letter, a KK. Like there's so.
Why is
many...
two Ks better than one? It's more playful. Is that the? Because that's to me, that's the 15-year-old girl thing. Is the only.
I've been described as worse.
Okay. And you've never sent me a KK, but you're telling me you would acknowledge more welcoming to a KK.
I have never sent you a K.
No.
Ever.
That's probably true.
And nor would I because
apparently
the wrath of somebody coming
from
back
me.
At me.
No. And the reason this is sticking with me a little bit is I recently had this conversation with someone else. I said K and they said, is everything all right?
See?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it was offensive or
right. Is
like
this a good
I was
friend?
Right. No, it's a family member. So not good friend.
So I was gonna say same thing, but no.
They said K, just send nothing before you send K.
Yep. I agree. Like your family a lot. Absolutely. Just don't say anything. It's fine.
Okay.
Anything else? I'm trying to think
okay
of something.
Okay is fine.
Yep.
KK is fine.
Yes.
K is not fine.
Try and come up with even one other thing that I'm not fine with.
Right.
Actually, if you said fine, then...
Alrighty.
No, fine, because fine is the word that doesn't mean fine.
Yeah. Right? No, I get that. To me, fine does come off as sort of like, fine.
Yeah.
But okay. I would have had no reason to give you that because you were texting me to say you're arriving within that arrival. Or like the window that you had presented between 4 and 5.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's to me. It could have been K. Like I'm
no.
Yay.
No, there would have been exclamation marks. And I'm just telling you, this is the one letter that you can write where most of the people
are going to ride with you on this.
Are going to? I'm telling you, I'm going to win this one.
Okay,
and it's not going to be close.
Right.
The only people that are going to side with you are people that don't want to side with me. But they know I'm right, but they still don't want to side with me, which is fine. I get that.
I think my dad's going to ride with me on this. My dad is like the minimum number of keystrokes in any response.
I'm going to be really polite here to your father. I don't know that your father is the demographic that I'm looking for in the response to this.
No.
It would be like...
The man recently turned 65.
Yeah, no.
Email was not a thing.
Yeah.
Texting was not a thing when he was... and now it's something he's forced to endure because that's how his children communicate with him or that's how work communicated with him. And so, you don't get much in response from the old man when you text him.
Okay. Yeah. So you, your father, and...
Hey, you know what? I've ridden in that crew before. If it's just me and the old man, I'll be okay. I'll be K.
So I'm just gonna, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you won't be K. You'll be okay. You know who's not okay?
Mm.
Oh my God, the Toronto Blue Jays. What the... Seriously. What the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm ready to get rid of these guys. Like, gone.
Can we start with Guillermo Martinez?
Tell me
it looks like the hitting coach is doing his job.
I only have one GM in my life. Okay. Right now, it's the guy in Ottawa, so.
Uh-huh. They're not good.
No, they're awful.
Okay.
And the season's over.
See, this is where I'd give, okay. Yeah, you're right. The season, I think I mentioned I had to sneak away, Lee, on holiday Monday from...
Mm-hmm.
Some of the family goings on because like 99.9% of the family I can't get enough of. And the point won the day and I had to sneak away from the brother-in-law's ranting and ravings.
Wow.
And so I thought, you know what? I can justify this. Got to do a show. Right. Got to do a Holiday Monday show. Right. Got to give the people what they want. A little solo Matt. That's what we're going to do here.
Yep.
So went and talked about it. And at the time, the Blue Jays were going to have to go 70 and 50 just to get to where they were last year, which was just barely sneaking in.
Right.
And 70 and 50 is elite company. That is win the division company. Like, and this team has shown nothing.
And that was
that they're going to be capable. So they did go in Monday, they won. Tuesday, they lost. You and I are sitting here.
Yeah.
We don't know how the Wednesday night game is going to play out.
I got a pretty good idea.
Okay,
but
fair enough. They're in trouble, man. They're in big trouble.
Yeah, I would even go past that. It's time now to make some real change.
Where do you want to start?
I want to start at the top.
Okay, let's agree that they're probably not going to start there.
Well, that's, you asked where I want to start.
No, you're right, I did. You're right.
I want to start with not mentioning the name Ross Atkins again.
Mm-hmm.
Can we do that? Can we
Lee
start
is gonna
there?
Follow up his juice diet, his juice cleanse, with the Atkins diet and cut the Atkins right out of this organization.
I like that. See, now you're starting to heat up. Seriously, Ross, your time, you came, you looked people in the camera and lied to them a year ago.
What was the lie?
Sorry. Lying is the wrong word. You faked your ass through a major, major time that everybody needed answers, and you couldn't give them the truth.
But what are you referring to? A year ago, we still were sort of coming
whatever off. The press conference was.
The one in the fall?
In the fall.
That's not a year ago.
Dude, now, it's May.
There are some there are some trends developing with Ross, where he has one press conference on Canadian Thanksgiving long weekend, and then his next one, or in season one, is Saturday morning of May long weekend. Come on, man. I know you're, people would who want to defend him would say, after the playoffs, you have to have a press conference. Cool. Friday or Tuesday, not during Thanksgiving long weekend. If you normally do one around the quarter pole of the season, cool. Friday or Tuesday, not Saturday of Victoria. Like, there's, you can read into that as much or as little as you want. It's starting to become a thing to me. I'm starting to look at that guy and go,
you can read into it a lot.
Fucking.
But a lot of teams do this, but you can read into it because you're right. So in the fall, not a year ago, it feels like a year.
It does
because
feel like a year.
Everything that's happened from the end of last year through this off season, where somehow I gave them the benefit of the doubt that they knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's quite clear that they didn't know what they were doing. And I feel stupid because I did give them the benefit of the doubt.
Their whole strategy through the offseason appeared to be, we bet our pitching will be exactly as elite as it was last year with no regression. And we believe our batting will just by chance just become better than it was last year.
Guess what?
That doesn't work.
No. And so I believe them, and I feel stupid, and I feel used as a fan that I believed in the group.
Yeah.
And now I'm done. Like, I'm finished.
Well,
because
so Rob texted me on Saturday as well of long weekend, said this is tear it down territory.
Yep. Yeah. It is. There's a lot of people going on in the long weekend.
Everybody but
here.
Me, man. I was sort of sitting in a stupor.
No, I think you doing the show solo point one. I think that's the right decision.
I was focused on other things.
Yeah, I think that's the right decision. Yeah. But it's tear it down time, and he's not the guy to do it. So now what?
I'm not sure I'm quite at tear it down. I might be at retool. Now we're pulling at strings and we're playing semantics.
No,
maybe
that's
a little
fair
bit.
If you think that, but is Ross Atkins the guy to do it?
Right. And that's what I was going to ask to you, or sort of like, I'm with you. I don't want that to be the guy. But as you correctly pointed out, I asked you what you would do. Do you believe they're likely to make a change at GM midseason? Because I don't see that. I think he's going to be given a chance to finish the year. Whether he goes any further than that, I don't know. But that freaks me out that he's going to be the guy at the deadline trading you know, probably Jimmy Garcia, Yusei Kikuchi. I don't know where you're at with Bo and Vlad. Like, they're going into their last years. Are they most valuable if someone else thinks they can get something out of them with two playoff runs instead of one? Are you ready to go that far?
Okay, so I love Bo Bichette. He is my favorite Major League Baseball player.
Right.
Okay? He's number one on my list of favorite players.
Yeah.
But if I'm still a Blue Jays fan more than I'm a Bo Bichette fan, like, I bleed with the Blue Jays. So if it takes trading Bo Bichette at his most to get
which he's not at right now.
Right. So that's why I wouldn't do it. But if somebody came to me and said, this is what I'm willing to do, and it was an overpay to get Bo Bichette, I would even trade him because I want this to be better.
Especially if you do think we probably are going to rebuild more than retool.
So then if we're going to rebuild and we're going to do all these other things, but we're going to keep Bo Bichette, what's the point? Yeah. And I'm out on Vladdy.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I've had my time.
It's taken some time for the numbers to rebound. For the last month or so, though, he's been well over a 300 hitter. The power has been zapped, but he's hitting better.
Yep.
Still, you're done?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Because I don't see him. It's all about the ceiling and where can you get to where I thought he could get to,
right?
Where I thought, you know, Bo Bichette, and he's been there, but it's about where guys can get to at their max to help the team.
Yeah.
And I don't believe.
Well, Bo's held his better, right? Know, like, yes, he's led the AL in hits two straight years, or I guess he missed last year because he was injured a bit, but he was on pace.
He's near the top.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, yeah, that's the point, that Vladdy's ceiling is lower, and I'm not sure.
We did not see that coming either.
No. I think we all thought it was going to be much higher.
For sure.
But now I don't.
Yeah.
And so it's not that I really dislike him. It's that his ceiling isn't high enough to be able to stick around and change this. But it all goes back to, I don't trust Atkins to do anything.
Yeah.
So now I'm scared. And I don't know why you wouldn't change a GM in the middle of the year. Like, why would you allow your GM
to make
your changes and then fire
him? Everybody's new GM comes in and says, well, I need this and this amount of time to evaluate for myself before I'll do anything. So you're just going to let this year drift by. Like, that's always the way it goes in any organization. We just saw it with the Sens, right? Like, Steos comes in, and I get it. You don't want to be reactionary. You don't want to
make major deals at the deadline.
That's what I'm saying, though. You come in and you go, I need some time to see what we have. I don't want to be overreactionary. And that's the responsible thing to do. But it does piss away another year, and Sens fans were frustrated by that, right? So, and last year, Brad Treliving comes in for the Leafs. You got 6 weeks to trade Mitch Marner before his no trade kicks in. Are you doing that? He kind of went, I just got here. That's way too soon. I'm not trading a Mitch Marner on 5 weeks, you know, having not. So, like, it's reasonable.
He probably should have.
He probably should have.
Yeah.
But it's not unreasonable to see that particular strategy and go, I get it. I just got here. I've been focused on another team. I've been working somewhere else. I need to get the lay of the land here. I need to get my bearings under me. Meanwhile, the fan base has been here the whole time and going, yeah, I need you to do something now because we're floundering. We're in trouble here. So,
but do you think Vladdy's, what is his value going to be later?
This is the thing. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you as much as I'm just laying out some of the challenges, right? Because I think Vladdy is still going to want to get paid like he thought he was going to coming out of 2021.
Agreed.
And I'm not prepared to do that. And I did say over this offseason, I would, and the start of this year would have made me look stupid. And so luckily they haven't done it yet. I did say over the course of this winter, I'd pay Bo. Now, I've seen enough, right? He had led the AL in hits. He had been on pace to do it again. I know what he is. If he wants to talk long term, I'm interested in doing that because I think I can kind of wrap my head around what it's going to take to get that done. Vladdy has been so all over the map, elite to barely playable, went from Golden Glove at first base to literally the worst face defense.
The worst
First base defense.
Defender.
Thank you. Appreciate you helping me pull that out of the fire. I'm getting fired up here, Lever.
Well, you should be, because they're awful. They're not getting better.
Yeah.
And
I don't know how you pay Vlad. I don't know what you are. And he's...
But who is going to make these decisions? So would you like to see Atkins gone, a new GM come in and not do anything because he needs to get a lay of the land?
No.
Okay, so what do you want to happen? You want Atkins to make these deals before the deadline?
No, I'm probably going to... One of two different scenarios. I'll fire the GM within the next couple of weeks, and I will let the new guy, and I'll probably, if I'm management, right, if I'm Shapiro or if I'm ownership, if this is still sort of where we're middling around at by the trade deadline, I will let the new guy, and I will tell the new guy, you're trading Kikuchi, you're trading Garcia.
Right.
Maybe Turner, right? Like,
yep.
He's sort of cratered a little bit. His numbers are still pretty good against lefties, but, you know, things like that. But I'm not going to force him to trade the two pillars in the season. Now, will that damage our return on them? Probably, but I'm going to give him some time, and then he'll decide, can he kind of retool this thing next winter, or is it time for him to then trade Bo and Vlad?
Okay.
Or I'm keeping Ross Atkins and until the end of the season, and then the new guy will be told. I will let, similar to the last scenario, I will let Atkins trade Kikuchi and Garcia and whoever else you can get value for at the deadline. And then the new guy will be told, I will fire Ross Atkins on October 1st, whenever the season ends. Hire the new guy no later, hopefully, than October 15th. Tell him this winter you're trading Bo and Vlad. And we're into full rebuild mode. Full rebuild mode.
I just don't know if...
Barring like a 20-5 stretch.
But if the end of the discussion means Ross Atkins is no longer the GM of the Blue Jays, why let him do all of these things?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Unless you're keeping him. Unless Ross Atkins somehow...
I don't think that's off the table either. He and Shapiro are that tight.
And that scares the bleep out of me. Because I just don't know that I have any faith left to give.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
Another F that Lee doesn't have to give.
Yeah. See?
Heating up.
You are.
NBA Jam.
He's heating up. You did that so well. It's these little offshoot things that you do so well. Anyway, I don't have another answer other than to let Atkins go, because I don't trust him to stick around and make things better. I don't trust him to make the deals. I don't trust him at all anymore. And so if I'll be really pissed off if they let him make all of these deals and then fire him at the end of the year. That will piss me off the most.
And I get that. I think that's reasonable. We've decided you're a dead man walking, but here, shape our franchise for the next 5 years.
Which is the most idiotic thing you could possibly do to run a franchise.
Yeah.
Just pick a lane and decide that you're keeping him, even if like 99% of the world thinks it's the dumbest thing in the world, like me.
Yeah.
Fine. Just pick a lane. Pick him or pick someone else, but do not have this lame duck guy make a bunch of changes in the middle of a year that you're supposed to be better, but you're not. And now you're going to let him go. And then you're going to explain it away. Well, the guy we wanted wasn't available till now. Bullshit.
Yeah. Let me take you back in time, Lever.
Okay.
I think this is going to land right in your wheelhouse. This is 11 years ago today, inside an Ottawa Senators, Pittsburgh Penguins playoff series. The Sens have just lost a game, and Daniel Alfredson has asked this question.
Is it feasible to beat them 3 times in a row?
Probably not. I mean, with their depth and power play right now, and, you know, it doesn't look too good.
It's the 2013 playoffs, Sens and Pens. You would have been, you'd been on 1,200 at the time. I remember being of two minds at this point. I'm not yet fully engrossed in the Ottawa sports media scene and following the Sens. I've only lived in town for a year or so at this point. And I remember being kind of like, because I hate Alfie at the time, right? And I don't know how much that's really dimmed over the last 11 years. But I remember being...
What possible reason would you have to... Hate's a strong word. Why would you hate Daniel Alfredson?
He pretended to throw his stick once.
Right. Yeah. He mocked another guy and didn't do something that somebody else did. Yes, I hate that guy.
Yeah. So I remember looking at that already of two minds going, ha-ha, he's ruling his team out. He's the captain. How do you follow that guy? And at the same time going, good for you, man. It's a pretty fucking honest answer to be like, yeah, no, we're probably not going to beat Pittsburgh three games in a row at this point. I'm curious. The reason I bring it up, mm-hmm. it's, you know, one of those things that comes up on your usual sports anniversary accounts and websites and yep. things like that. But I bring it up with you sitting here because no doubt the next day or in the days to come, you would have been sitting on the microphone doing talk radio here lots in the nation's talk. Capital. I'm curious what your recollection was on or is on how this was received in the nation's capital. Did the fan base get it and kind of go, yeah, I see his point? Or were they as pissed off as a lot of people online at the time seemed to be? The, you can't do that. He's thrown in the towel. What was the reaction coming in on the text line and the phone calls?
So unlike you, and probably to the fault, but I don't blame people, Daniel Alfredson is... and was and still is everything to a Sens fan.
Right.
Okay. So when he did that, there was some that didn't like it mm-hmm. because it was too honest.
Yep.
And some that understood because Alfie can do no wrong. Like it doesn't matter what he sure. says or what he does. It's we will just follow him.
And many fans would have already been thinking this.
Right.
The question is, were they prepared to hear their captain say it?
I think at the time, having known Daniel Alfredson at that point for, you know, over a decade and, yeah. and fans, you know, having him be the face of the franchise for, what, 15 years at that point?
Yeah.
There were some that at the time, it didn't get the reaction in Ottawa that it got everywhere else. You know what I mean? Like
yeah, okay.
Everywhere else was just
I can't believe he
right. It was this viral
yeah.
comment that, you know, whether it's Leafs fan or Habs fan or around the National mm-hmm. Hockey League, especially, you know, it's Sidney Crosby and it's the Penguins and how successful they had been
yeah.
in the last 5 years before that, that Ottawa was supposed to be, you know, getting into that realm and they couldn't quite crack it. And now Daniel Alfredson's confirming mm-hmm. that they can't get to that level. I think a lot of people in Ottawa felt like this was done in Daniel Alfredson's best way of how can I send a message through honesty? You'll hear, and when you play the clip again, you'll hear him pause for a second.
Is it feasible to beat them three times in a row?
Probably not.
So
yeah. Right after the
Sylvain Sailleron with a great question from Le Droit. He is a fantastic reporter, by the way.
Working for the P-Dub now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, he's great at everything he does.
Yeah.
The pause there,
it does look like
Cerebral was always Daniel Alfredson's, and he always knew what he was doing. Yeah. And I got to the point with him and a lot of people.
Yeah, is it feasible to beat them three in a row? No. Like, it's not that. He takes a second, and then he gives the and then he takes another second. He's working on something.
He knows that people will listen to him,
yep.
and they will react.
Both he knows in and out of the locker room.
Yeah, his teammates will hear him.
Yep.
And when Daniel Alfredson speaks, he knows that he's kind of the voice for everyone else. Like, even if everyone else disagreed, they're not going to
right.
They're gonna throw Alfie under the bus in the media going, I don't know what that guy's talking about. We can come back. They're not going to do that because it's Daniel Alfredson. He's their leader. He's their captain.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the reaction that at least some of us had, and I think some fans had, was that Daniel Alfredsson on purpose told the truth to send a message that his team has not been good enough and still has a chance to be better,
right,
and get their shit together because they haven't been good enough so far, and it's not acceptable.
Almost a, because he does go out of the way to reference their power play.
Yep.
If our penalty kill is going to play like this, no, we're probably not coming back. Like, is it almost like a little sleight of hand, a little misdirection, a little, you know, if the series is going to keep going this way, then no, we're not going
to. It's calling out your team.
Yeah.
Just in a different, not in that, like, we need to be better.
Right.
Basically telling everyone how great Pittsburgh is.
And this is meant in, there was a stretch there where there was a couple of Scandinavian captains in this area. Alfredsson, mm-hmm. Sundin, Koivu.
Yep.
You had Lidstrom take over down in Detroit a little bit later on. And their style of communicating with the media is just a little bit different, right? It's a little more
upfront,
but also careful. Like, I'm going to answer your question, and I'm probably going to answer it with less platitudes and cliches than the Canadian captains do. But I do still want to take just a second to think about it, right? And make sure I'm going to frame this correctly. And so even as someone who obviously was not a Sens fan, I remember looking at that and going, you know, after the immediate, wow, wears off and going, that's an interesting approach he just took there.
Yep.
To almost, I know that this message is going to be heard inside my locker room. And I'm saying, the way we're playing right now, no, we ain't coming back. And so we don't have another loss to give. So let's, and maybe that's me reading too much into it, but like in the next game, we need to be better than we've been so far. And like, can I send the message that way? And right. So I'm not sure if you and I are saying exactly the same thing, but it's a different.
We pretty much are.
Yeah, I didn't take it as him going, nah, we suck and we have no chance against these guys. I didn't take it that way.
He's too calculated a guy.
Yeah.
And he does things on purpose, whatever his reasoning is, and we might not always agree with the reasoning.
Yeah.
He did everything on purpose. So if you think it's a natural reaction, he's thought about how he's going to do it. Not necessarily that exact question is going to be asked,
sure,
but how is he going to deliver a message? And the other thing that I actually loved about this is that he took all the blame for it, right? Like, he basically took the rest of him telling his teammates to get their shit together while everyone is focused on Alfie and they're not focused
on.
I
can't believe Alfie just said that. That's the headline tomorrow. That's the guy in the media.
Not focused
on
anybody else. Yeah.
You've got 2 days with the heat on just me.
Just him.
To go figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always admired that. And I thought that was a really good example of things that Daniel Alfredsson did all the time.
It really tests a fan base, though.
Yep.
That's hard on a fan. Like, I'm being, I guess, unfair or like, in the same situation, if Matt Sundin says to me and my fan base, yeah, no, we're probably not coming back against New Jersey or whoever they were running up against at the Philly, or I'm sitting there as a fan going, I agree with you, but you can't say that. You can't come out and say it. I need you in there believing it, right? So it takes some balls to be willing to do what Alfie just did and go, yeah, this is probably not going to play well in some circles, but I'm worried about I'm most interested in how it's going to play inside the organization, and so I'll take the bullets for it for the next 48 hours.
And when you only care about how it's going to be taken within the organization and you don't care how it's going to be taken outside of it, to me, you're leading. So it doesn't mean he's the greatest leader.
No.
Like,
but in that moment,
a lot of people do this. In that moment, he was speaking to the rest of the organization.
Yeah.
And I don't think he cared what the public perception would be. As
those
long as
sitting at home on the couch.
As long as the message got
Cheetos dust on our
across. Like, sometimes I get corn twists in my hair. Yeah. If I'm really having a good night. But you don't see them there. They blend in with the skin.
I see them in the shower the next morning.
Exactly. There were different ways that he tried to lead, and he was not a rah-rah guy.
No.
He was methodical.
He's an on the ice guy.
Thought-provoking, yeah. Lead by example. But when he spoke, he always spoke softly. Mm-hmm. But people listened because of the way that he spoke. And I'm not trying to make this about wrestling, but I always seem to. One of the greatest talkers in the history of pro wrestling was Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yep.
When he spoke, people listened. He never yelled.
Yeah,
he never got
in an
angry.
Era where everyone else was, you Hulkamaniacs, right. Dude. No, lean in, listen. Jake's
almost in a whisper.
Yeah.
He would talk.
Yeah. Gets your attention.
To say that I'm going to hurt you. And I'm going to do it with my snake. And I'm going to wrap my python around your neck. And I'm going to choke you out. But that's the way he would talk.
ASMR
and
with Lee.
But people would.
All new podcast.
People would listen.
Yes.
And Daniel Alfredson just wasn't a rah-rah speaker. But when he spoke, people listened. And I always admired that from him. And he did pick a couple of big moments to make sure the spotlight was on him so that his teammates
could regroup
without the spotlight on them. And all of this because he, leading by example, with a team that wasn't good enough in some spots that frustrated him.
No, that year they weren't as good as Pittsburgh.
No.
But that doesn't mean you just bail. And
no, you have to try and win,
yeah.
Right? And so you're doing what you think is best for the rest of the
That's
group
right.
to get to their heights. And I do think Daniel Alfredson, over a point of his career, was very frustrated at that the rest of the team wasn't at his level. Not in an arrogant way,
yep.
Just he was at a certain level that other guys couldn't get to.
Sure.
And that frustrated
We've
him.
We've seen that across sports, right? One superstar. How's Mike Trout feeling right now?
Yeah.
Or, you know,
exactly. So, and that internally frustrated him because he wanted to be great.
Yeah. We have reached the third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm going to leave it up to you whether or not you want to dive right into those series or whether or not you have any thoughts on Vancouver, because I don't think any one of us saw them winning the division when this season started, even once they did. I really didn't have them going very deep. They did force Edmonton to seven. I didn't think they were particularly good in game seven, but
or
they made it interesting.
Or,
yeah. But, you know, any thoughts on what the Canucks pulled off this year? Are you sold that they'll be of that caliber again next year? Was this sort of one long hot streak? What do you I started off saying I'm going to leave it up to you. I guess I'm not. I'm pushing it to you. What do you think of the Canucks after this year heading into next year?
I have a lot of thoughts on the Canucks.
Okay.
Not a lot of them are good.
Okay.
Their goaltending.
She loves you. Yeah. One last time, because you're never going to hear that name again.
Ever. Good for him.
Maybe at Worlds next year, Latvia. You know, playing.
Yeah, they can tell stories about how great he was when.
And he was pretty good.
He was okay.
For a quick run.
But the Vancouver Canucks, I think, were the result of a very good start and showing what the National Hockey League is. It's if you start really well and you're just fine.
Yep.
The rest of the year, you can still win the division.
You could have a swoon.
You can
there
still
mid-season, for sure
get in and win a playoff round. There's not a lot of this team that I believe in. When I watch that team, I go, okay, do I completely believe in their goaltending? I like Demko, but
He been in that, I would say yeah. To me, he's in that upper echelon of guys. There's not much else on that team I fully believe in.
Right. Their defense core.
Philip Hronek was almost just awful in the playoffs. Like,
right. And
Quinn Hughes sort of fell off. Now, he was asked to do a lot.
And that's the problem.
Yes,
he was asked to do too much.
Yeah.
And you do fall off in playoffs when you going up against
when they
elite,
can isolate you.
Yeah. When you're going up against elite teams that can isolate you and have a plan for you.
Yep.
And then you're asked to do more than you should be.
Right.
Then
JT Miller, I think, had the run of his life. I don't think that's this guy long term.
Oh, it's not.
Elias Pettersson had a horrible playoff. I would expect if we did this all again in the exact same situation next year, he would be better.
But is he great?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
But I don't expect he would be this bad again.
I'm with you that I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But here's what I know. He's not consistently great.
No.
And until he proves to me that he is, he's not. He's a player that goes through streaks of being brilliant and streaks of being awful.
Now, if we overlook that 2020 bubble season, this is his first real, you know, deep playoff run where he was expected to kind of carry the load, be the guy. And they dicked him around a lot, if we can circle back a little bit, on his line mates.
Mm-hmm.
At times he was running out there with Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty, you know, a couple of Leaf castaways. You know, that's going to work. They threw him out there with some line mates that I don't really understand what they were trying to accomplish. It certainly didn't look like it was in the interest of getting him going. I don't know, man. I don't know whether...
Okay, let me rephrase this and ask you back.
Okay.
What is it about the Canucks that you do believe in?
Like I said, Demko healthy. That's it.
Okay, well, then our discussion will be short on whether we think...
I believe Quinn Hughes is great. I don't believe he's going to be a Norris Trophy nominee every year.
Yeah, but is that team guaranteed to make the playoffs and guaranteed learn from this, you know, run of two rounds and seven games, and then they're going to take it to the next level? I have no confidence.
No, if you're banking money on Tyler Myers being really good, and I don't know, is Lindholm staying? And
when I watch Edmonton's defense, I actually think Edmonton's not a bad team. But the second that Desharnais steps on the ice, and you know, my man Cody Ceci, who scored in Game 7, way to go, Cody! My man, who, by the way, has more Game 7 goals.
I know.
Do you know?
Yeah, this is the Cody Ceci.
Yeah? Say it for me.
Cody Ceci, Zach Hyman, Connor Brown have more Game 7 goals in the last 3 years than the Leafs. Something like that.
Mm.
I read the stat on the night. I can't remember what it was because, as usual, we're making it all about the Leafs, even on the night that it was happening.
No, we're making it about what Mitch isn't doing.
Okay.
Yeah, when Cody Ceci has more goals than your team in Game 7s?
Yeah. Not good, man.
Tough break.
It is a tough break.
Tough break. But Edmonton's defense and goaltending is not good. And they still beat Vancouver and dominated them when it mattered the most. So I just...
They did have a scare put into them.
Yeah, of course they did. Yeah. But... if you watch Game 6 and 7 and thought that Vancouver had a chance to win those games, then you are mistaken. They were just outclassed everywhere they went on the ice by a team that isn't even that good in the Edmonton Oilers. So your question about Vancouver is I just don't have a lot of confidence in much about their team. I mean,
it's hard to ask before we see what they do in the offseason.
I know, but
do you think they're a
like
playoff
coach
team next year?
Nope.
No. Well... what is LA going to be? Edmonton will be in again. Vegas will be in again. And now you get into the mushy middle. Is it Vancouver or Seattle or Anaheim's not going to be any good.
But I have no confidence that Vancouver is going to be.
Okay. Yeah, to me, they're closer to that LA mushy middle.
When I go through, though, it's not about where they're going to finish next year. I just go through the structure of their organization and go, okay, who is it that's the foundation that I believe in that you can surround? Because as much grief as I want to give the Leafs at every turn, all you have to do is go through the foundation and go, those are pretty good players. Now, to surround the players with other guys that can get the job done when it matters the most, okay, we can start having those discussions, but it's the same discussions we're having with Edmonton with surrounding the McDavids and the Draisaitls and the Hymans and the Bouchards with other people that can just play.
Yeah.
Well, Vancouver doesn't have that. So I don't see where their foundation is there, at least to be able to have a discussion
tough,
that you can
really
build around.
Tough break on them with Besser and the the blood clot, like to have that arise right before game seven, that's one of your game breakers, right?
For sure. So. Yeah. I mean, and even you saw what Mikheyev was in early and
out and then back in. And
yeah, but then he gets a breakaway and, you know, doesn't get a shot on goal. And
yeah, I'm familiar with that. I've seen it.
Yeah. Did his best Connor Brown.
Yeah. Familiar with that too.
Yeah.
There's three different NHL Canadian fan bases when he got that shorthanded breakaway all going, ah, before he even shot the puck.
I don't believe in Vancouver at all. Okay. I just don't look at the structure of their team that think that they can build properly to be in the class of some of the other teams that are there. Like, I look at even that whole other division, and the playoffs suck as far as the setup is concerned. It drives me bonkers. But I look at the other playoffs, right? And you look at Winnipeg and you look at Vegas and you look at Colorado and
Dallas.
Well,
Vegas was a crossover. They're in the other division.
No, I know, but all
we
of
talked
those
about
teams,
it. That bracket, Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, Vegas. Fuck you, right?
Right. Like, and all of those teams are better than Vancouver, and Edmonton's better than Vancouver.
Yeah.
And so which team are they going to be better than next year? None of those teams.
No, I think that's right.
Okay, so I'm out on them. I hope they gain some experience for
a hell of a run.
Yeah, good for
them. Kudos to them for not burning their city to the ground.
Yeah, they almost beat Edmonton when they shouldn't have. So good for them for getting that close. But they were outclassed by an average team in game six and seven when they had a chance to win.
So Edmonton moves on to Dallas. It sounds like you just said Edmonton's not that good. You think they got a shot against Dallas?
Doesn't sound I think they're going to win.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You think they're going to be dead?
Yeah, I do.
After saying they're not very good?
Correct.
Do you think Dallas's sub not very good?
I think Dallas's path has been very difficult.
It really has.
And I think Connor McDavid...
They've had a bit of a rest.
I think Connor McDavid is set to tear the world on fire.
Connor McDavid...
And I don't think you need to be a great team when now you're going to put Draisaitl and McDavid.
That guy just seems ready. Like,
I know. Like a powder keg.
At some point, you can't hold that down forever.
I agree. That's exactly what I'm saying. I don't think Edmonton's a great team. Their defense, when I watch Desharnais on the ice, I'm like, I could play better than that guy. And then Skinner looks like he's going to cry every time he lets in a goal. And it's like... And I'm not trying to be overly critical. I'm just saying their body language and some of
his
the
body language all year has been awful.
It has
that was
been,
one of the things they tried to pound out of him. You can't look like that.
But Desharnais and CeCe and some of the problems that they have on defense, I just don't know that they can be.
It's really interesting.
Corrected.
I saw somebody do the math on this, and you know I like kind of the analytics stuff. That both Nurse and CeCe are like 22 points worse than their season average. Not scoring points, but like goals for and against worse when they play together than with anyone else. If you split that pair up, they both look elite, and yet they just keep going back to pairing them up. And
it makes no sense.
It doesn't make any
sense. It's like Guy Boucher when he kept running CeCe out with Dion Phaneuf.
Right.
And it's like,
stop it.
What are you doing? Like
this year was Riley Brody in Toronto. Both of these guys are capable NHL defenders. Stop playing them together. It's not working. It's
so... I haven't. You like analytics?
Yes.
On Money Puck, they have the sort of the odds and the percentages of where teams are going to end up, and now who has the best chance. And right now, at 29.1%, the Edmonton Oilers have the best chance to win the Stanley Cup.
I'm surprised to hear that, honestly.
Followed by
New York Rangers.
Correct, 27.8%, Dallas at 24, and coming in last, the Florida Panthers at 18.2. But what I love about this graphic is that for the first time in a very long time, everyone is between 18 and 29%.
Yeah.
Which means they actually have no idea who's going to win.
No.
And so
I think I saw Dom from The Athletic, who does Dom's position, their model, right? Their predictive model.
Yep.
I think he said he has this at 2, 3, 4, and 7 in terms of the best teams in the league, right? Like there was a lot of talk that if Vancouver had won, this would have been the first time ever that four division winners would have made it to the conference final, which is insane. I guess that's something to love and hate about the NHL.
But I'll go with hate.
Okay, fair enough. And so we haven't gotten that. But in terms of the best teams that made the playoffs, you had the second, third, fourth, and seventh. So we're sort of roughly where we should be. This should be a really good second round. Or third round. I'm curious, though. You know, obviously you're expecting McDavid to explode. What is it you don't like about Dallas? Or is it just the explosion is going to be so big that no one could endure it?
What I saw out of Dallas in the first round would scare me against Edmonton. So they were better against Colorado, obviously.
That was a great series.
It was a great series. And fast. Like, fast. But what I saw out of Dallas early in that Winnipeg series are some of the holes I think Edmonton can exploit. I think if you put some of those guys, like when you go offense versus offense, crazily enough, they're not great defenders. You know what I mean? Like when like people talk about Connor McDavid, Connor McDavid's an incredible player because he's got the puck all the goddamn time. But he's not a great defender.
No.
He doesn't want to be a great defender.
It doesn't have to be.
So there's some guys on Dallas that are the same.
That's right.
And I'm so interested to see when the greatest players in the world, the McDavids and the Draisaitls, have the puck, how can Dallas commit to stopping those guys? I don't think that they're going to be able to, even though they have better goaltending, they have a better defense.
Yeah.
I think McDavid and Draisaitl are too good to be able to be stopped by that team.
To me, this is the biggest test. And we all thought, I think, I don't remember if you and I specifically talked about it, but I know I was not in the minority when I said, man, Chris Tanev, a perfect, like, rounded out Dallas beautifully, right? Yeah. What a great acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
In round one against Jack Eichel, the pair of Esa Lindell and Chris Tanev kept Jack Eichel in the teens in terms of expected goals, like shut him down and did almost the exact same thing in round two to Nathan MacKinnon. Now, neither of those guys are Connor McDavid. I understand. But that pairing and the way that Dallas is doing their thing, playing their system, and with that pair specifically, I'm not saying Dallas is for sure going to win, but I am fascinated to see, can they do it again, stepped up another level? And even if you can't keep it in the teens, can you keep it in the 20s or the 30s where you're still by far doing better, right? Then that to me is the most fascinating.
And they probably will be able to do that. But my point is if you keep it in, as you said, the 20s or the 30s, if it's in the 30s,
that might be enough for Edmonton.
That might be enough.
Yeah.
And I'm a true believer in sort of the history of the game and the difference between good and great and generational players.
Yeah.
When you talk about the generational players of the game, the Gretzky's, the Lemieux's, the Orr's, when you get to those people, when they got to a certain level or a certain like spotlight or chance to put their teams on their backs, they not only rose to that occasion, it was like, there's just no way you're going to stop me.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that McDavid can breathe and go, I don't care how we got here. Mm-hmm. I don't care that it took seven games. I don't care that it was against an inferior Vancouver team.
Yeah.
We're here now and nobody is stopping me. And I'm just a believer in that when it comes to the greatest to ever play. And I do think that he eventually will be in that discussion. He's in year 9. A lot of guys that won, the Gretzky's, the Lemieux's, the Orr's, won in like year 5, year 6. And now it's taken McDavid 9 years and probably not his fault. He is not going to let this opportunity pass him by. I know that they're good and he might be back and all that stuff, but I just don't think when they say the first round or the first two rounds are the hardest to get out of, I think they mean it for some of the great players, not the great teams.
Mm-hmm.
And now he can breathe and go, all right, you know what? This is my show now. And I just don't know that Dallas has a team to stop him. I know they're actually a better team, but
depth wise, yeah.
But now I start to believe in the individual more. As long as Skinner doesn't throw up on himself.
Which is a reasonable possibility.
No, it is. And that's the scary part. If you're an Oilers fan, you're scared to death of that.
No, it's there's a lot of history here in this series, and it'll be interesting to watch Edmonton be the one in the history of these two teams to now have the star power advantage. We all remember 97. It's Todd Marchant and
greatest
Curtis
Bob Cole.
One of the unbelievable, right? Against against that loaded Dallas Stars team. A year or two later, they run it back. It's Tommy Salo now.
Yeah.
And they made it close again. So there's some history there. As you move to New York and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a hard time getting amped up for this one quite the same way, but I'm pretty out on New York trying to paint themselves as the underdogs. You win the President's Trophy. Could you stop? Could you stop pretending you're being disrespected and talked about as the underdog? It's going to be a good series. The goaltending battle should be really interesting. I think this is another one of those series where New York probably has better depth, where maybe the very top end of Florida is a little higher with your Barkovs and your Tkachuks if they're going to elevate. Are you similar to me in that your interest level is slightly less on this side, or are you more fired up about this one?
I'm actually pretty fired up about it. Now, again, I'm a little bit biased because my hatred of the New York Rangers is almost unparalleled when it comes to... It's the Philadelphia Eagles one in my life of teams that I absolutely, like, if they just never played again, I'd be happy.
The league just inexplicably folded the franchise.
Right. Like, I'd actually be happy. Yeah. Like, literal joy that people lost their jobs and... But just with that
serves you right for working for them.
Yeah, just for that team specifically. But number two might be the New York Rangers.
Okay.
So that's where I come from when I start this discussion.
Yeah.
I hate them. But... So I do. But when you go down and some of the great players, I think it's an unbelievable coaching matchup. Like, just to have those guys there going up against each other.
Paul Maurice said a Sawyer. I can't believe it. Sorry.
I can't not love that guy.
It's wearing a little thin for me.
What's that?
The act, which I
totally get.
Yeah.
It is an act. I just happen to like the performance.
Sure.
That's fair.
Sometimes he does perform quite well.
No, and I know it's an act. It's not like I'm going, oh, wrestling's real tonight. Right? Like, oh, no, it's real tonight.
Yeah.
It's a performance later. But,
that other stuff, that was fake. These two, though. These two.
And that's what always gets me about people. Like, it's like that guy has an act all the time, but then he'll say something and everyone gets fired up about it.
Yeah.
Because they believe him that time.
Right.
Like, why? Why? But I happen to like the act. And I also think, to me, the one thing that's different is what Florida did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And what they are now drawing on in this series that's going to be a very difficult series, I think gives them the slight edge only because of what they went through last year.
So the Rangers are the underdogs.
I will never look at the New York fucking Rangers as an underdog ever. And so I just don't like I know one of my good friends is best friends with a former coach of the New York Rangers.
Okay.
Okay. So I hear a lot about what some of those guys were like to coach. Now, again, it comes from a coach who is no longer there.
Sure.
So,
yep.
You know,
everybody's got a perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not always like those players are playing great. They're in the conference finals and they've been a great team. So they're not all dog crap.
No.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's true.
They're all good players.
Somewhat capable.
And it's about how to get them going. And maybe that coach couldn't necessarily find the right ways to get them going. But I've heard a lot about the way that some of them play and the way that some of them decide to not play when things are not going well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of love for some of those guys on the team.
Right.
And I've heard a lot, probably more than most teams, because this former coach is very opinionated and doesn't care who will listen. And to sit around and listen to him and one of my good friends who also was in the league for a long time, to just listen to them because they don't care who's listening.
Right.
They don't mince their words. Like, it's just, this is what happened. And it fires me up even more to watch them lose again. And then to turn on themselves and to blame everyone else but them for the reasons why they lost.
Yeah.
So I'm actively cheering for Florida to win and have a chance to.
This one's likely to be more physical than the West, which in the time you and I grew up watching weird. Hockey. Yeah. The West was a war to get out of. It feels to me like with the characters on both sides of this one's going to be the war, right? When you look at some of the...
Oh, and the media will...
Your Trubas and your Tkachuks.
For sure. And the media will hype this up and make more... The coaches will make more of it. They know what they're doing.
Yep.
It's like the greatest former Carolina coaches in the history. Like, this is the battle to see who's the greatest former coach ever.
And no matter who wins, Carolina gets nothing from it.
I'm just going to say. But this one has me more – like, I'm cheering for McDavid to win.
Right.
Not necessarily because they're Canadian or – I don't even like Edmonton as a city. Like, I just – there's not a lot of things I like about
Edmonton.
But at
some point,
Edmonton.
You want to see the star do well.
I do.
You want to see the star on the biggest stage.
Yeah, and I think he deserves that. I think I like Connor McDavid. And so I'm cheering for him specifically, but I'm definitely cheering for the Florida Panthers as the team that I want to –
Okay.
And I think they're better than the Rangers just because of what they went through last year. Slightly.
Right. Let's
and
take
I hate Kreider. And I don't like Zibanejad either.
Anything else before I try and give us a break?
Shesterkin's overrated.
Okay. Thanks for showing up. It was fucking amazing. Sorry.